Welcome to Metal Minds, the Pit Unplugged, the Metal.de podcast. Today we dive once again into the world of metal, exploring 40 years of thrash metal. My name is Diana Heinbucher and I'm guiding you through today's pit. There are bands that come and go like trends, and then there are bands that become benchmarks themselves, because they never felt bounded to trends but always follows their own compass. Testament belongs to the later category. Since the early 80s, they have represented a sound that moves between anger and wisdom, technically brilliant, spiritually charged, and constantly open to change. Four decades of thrash metal, four decades of societal change, four decades of technological progress, crisis, and renewal. Today, I want to talk with Eric about how Testament has managed to survive all this and continue to say something new each time. Welcome, Eric. Glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's nice to be here.
So you just finished an extensive European tour. How do you feel about that?
I feel great. I think it was a really cool run, and the bands that we had, everything went really smooth. Newcomers Nervosa, and then Long Friends Destruction. We've never played with them. We've done some festivals in the late 80s with them. And Obituary, you know, we've been friends with them for a long time, but we've never actually toured with them. So yeah, we went all across Europe, and a lot of the shows were sold out, which was great. We have a new record out called Parabellum, so that came out as well, and that probably helped a little bit of the hype. And yeah, it was great. We had a really good time.
Okay, this sounds impressive. I asked myself by preparing this podcast if you ever think, after all these years of touring, you are too old for this shit.
Not really. I mean, you know, I think we're still very much in the game, and we really love what we do. And yeah, I mean, we make a living at it, and it's probably one of the best jobs ever. You know, I mean, to be able to create music and still be really into what we do. As a metal fan, I'm really happy with what we come up with, especially the new record. I mean, I'm sure every band says that about all their new stuff, but I think this one in particular, because I was kind of going down memory lane and listening to some of the other stuff. And some of it was, most of it I really liked. Some of it I was like, huh, after listening to our new one, I feel like the new one just really feels natural. But it's progressed a lot, I think. You know, having newcomer drummer Chris Dovis with us, me and him together writing and putting together the music, it feels really good. And I think Chuck just adapted really well with all his different styles of singing, you know, ballads, black death metal. And then me participating in the vocals as well on the first track gives it a little bit of an edge. You know, we come out swinging with it. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You said it. It feels natural, this new record. And you made for such a long time music. What do you think changed, despite that there is a new drummer and it's always renewed the process? Why does this record feel so natural for you?
I think just the writing sessions, they didn't feel forced. You know, there was a big gap, you know, from the last record with COVID and just having time to ponder kind of what we're doing, and you know, the whole world kind of closed down for a year and a half, 2 years, and it was kind of a good break, I think. Maybe not for everybody, but you know, financially I'm sure it hurt a lot of people, but it was kind of cool to have some time off and look back and reevaluate and just slow down. But you know, getting back in the swing of things, it was like, wow, this is really cool what we're doing, you know. And yeah, coming back, and then, you know, Dave Lombardo came back with us for a little while. That was fun. But it didn't work out, you know, long term, which you know, I didn't think it was going to anyway, but it still was fun while we had it. But getting new blood in the band with Chris and just going over some riffs that I had, and just nothing was forced. It just, I think his drumming, especially with, you know, like a lot of the newer style of music that were in the metal genre, you know, a lot of fast and all the crazy stuff. He's at that age where he understands where we're coming from, being fans of like Thin Lizzy and UFO and Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden, but still being into a lot of the new stuff, you know. Well, not so new, but, you know, like Emperor and, you know, black metal bands like that. But then even some of the newer stuff, like, God, I can't even think of some of the names right now. I'll remember in a little bit. But, you know, stuff that's been out for the last 10 years. We're both fans of that kind of stuff. So it was not that we're influenced by it, but that we're fans of that stuff, and just playing my style of, you know, guitar playing with his drums, it felt natural. It wasn't pushed.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. This makes a lot of sense. And I have many questions to this, and I'm searching in my long script for the right question again. But maybe we go step by step, and then later we come back to this, how you adapt over the time. And when you're looking at Testament's history, one thing is clear: you never repeated yourselves. Your sound is recognizable, but never static over the decades. So you described something like a principle, I think, to listen to also the new stuff. Some bands or people, if they get older, they stop to listen to new music.
Yeah, I mean, even some of the older bands that are around are coming back and doing some really cool stuff. Like the new Corner record is amazing. The new Cryptopsy record is amazing. And then there's newer bands that I really like Mental Cruelty, a band from Germany. They're just I love it. It's great. And, you know, there's other new from the States. There's a band called Gold Star, which is amazing. So there's all this, you know, new stuff, but I'm still holding on to, you know, my roots and kind of meshing all that together. And if you listen to Parabellum, you get that vibe.
Yeah.
You know, you get the big power ballad, but then, you know, the opener is like, wait a minute, what?
The
it just opener, comes out swinging. It's,
yeah, yeah. The opener, yeah. Gives us the from history, from the past, the hand, and then it's like closing a circle, or the connection. What you said to the roots, it's very cool, I think.
You know, it's I was thinking, you know, just when I'm writing, I'll listen to stuff and our older stuff, and the one record that was hitting me was The Gathering. That one just slays all the way through. And I was thinking, like, what if, you know, that kind of vibe, or that's where my head was at, but, you know, what if we take it a little bit step further? And, you know, even the record Demonic, you know, I mean, that's probably not one of the favorites of the, you know, more popular metal fans, or Testament fans, I should say. But it really hit home with a lot of newer fans that weren't into Testament. And then there's, you know, The Ritual, and there's Practice What You Preach, and those are the more traditional Testament records. But how do you blend all that together? And I think Parabellum is kind of the answer.
Yeah.
And they're all cohesive, you know what I mean? If you listen to it from start to finish, the way the track order goes, it just really knocks you upside the head. I think it works really well. I mean, because it goes from, you know, like I said, from like just crazy, you know, newer kind of style, kind of like The Gathering, but, you know, on steroids, and then even more crazier, and then it gets more groovy and dark. And that's another thing, is keeping it dark. I mean, metal should have that kind of ominous feeling, I think, you know. But then, you know, we explore into some hard rock stuff like Nature of the Beast. That could be like a new wave of British heavy metal type of song. Meant to Be is one of my favorites. I mean, that we haven't had a power ballad in a long time. And I think lyrically, the way Chuck sang it and what it's talking about, it's something that everybody can relate to, you know, the melancholy of a relationship.
Yeah. You
know? So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there. I've been digging it.
Also, Meant to Be, also by preparing this podcast, I think about what's my favorite track, and I stuck on Meant to Be, and then I think, oh, I think it's a thing why I'm a woman, because it's a very slow song, and it came up in the later than with the power, and yeah, but I like this song so much. It's vibrating
me,
and it's very cool.
It's really cool. I mean, a lot of this, I think also the mix, first time we've worked with Jens Berggren from Sweden. And, you know, we've been working with Andy Sneap for a long time, and he's in Judas Priest now, and he's selective on who he's working with and just also time frame. So, you know, he was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this next one, but, you know, what are you thinking? And when I mentioned Jens' name, he was like, oh, that'd be awesome, you know? And yeah, it worked out really well. I think he did a great job in making it sound really fresh. And yeah, going back to Meant to Be, I think when you listen to that song with earphones, it just takes you to another place.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, you can get lost in it, just like, wow.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
One time I was on a trip in a train, and then I heard the record, and I stuck on Meant to Be, and then I repeat and repeat, and really, because there are also some things to discover in the song, and
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I haven't listened to it for a while, but when I do listen to it, I just want to hear that transition again. You know, like, oh, that's so cool. But you got to be careful because you get sick of it. At some point, though, people will give me, you know, like, what's your opinion? It's like, sometimes I don't have an opinion anymore because I've heard it so many times. But I know that when we first wrote it, the feeling I had, like, when we came up with it, I knew there was something special. You know, I was like, wow, this is going to be really cool. Like Infanticide AI, that was one of the first ones we wrote. And I was just, you know, excited. I was listening to it in the car, going over to Chuck's house, taking his boat out, and we'd go out in the middle and just in the middle of the Delta and just crank it, you know, super loud. And like, what do you think? He's like, yeah, write more stuff like this. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And if you say it in this way, it feels like you were a very young band and the fire in you were never came down.
I mean, that's a good thing about getting, you know, especially in the rhythm section, getting a new drummer that, I mean, we've had new drummers and it works out great, but I think there's something special working with Chris. It's just, I feel like we're both on the same page. I think in the past I've had to explain, I mean, all the drummers we've worked with have been great. You know, the Gathering with Dave, Paul Bostoff was amazing on Formation of Damnation. Really good job. Gene Hoagland is just, you know, one of the best drummers. He's really great. But with Chris, I feel like instead of me going, so on this part, he would answer my question or what I'm going to tell him, and he would just get it, you know, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wouldn't even have to say anything. I would just play the riff and he would know what I'm thinking.
Yeah. That's...
Or if I said, hey, can you do a bomb blast? Like, you know, just crazy stuff. But then we go into a groove and he'd go, you know, maybe the other drummers would go, well, what if I just did fast double bass and then the groove, you know, not the blast thing. And there's a way to do a blast where it doesn't sound like, oh, they're doing blast beats, or you can make it sound musical, you know. And that's one thing I think we got away with on this record without being like, oh, Testament's doing blast beats now. I don't even feel that. I listen to the song and I'm just like, this is, you know, excuse my French, this is effing heavy. As, you know, as a duck. So.
Yeah. Very cool. Also the creative spirit that appears when, or the, no, not appear, that that comes up when you're together in one room and doing music, making music in jamming, I want to say, jamming. And then, yeah.
And he totally gets me too, because when we jam, we don't go to a studio. We're at my house. I have a studio in my basement. So, you know, we'll go down there and jam a little bit. And like 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes later, I'm just like, he's also, and I'm like, I'm just not feeling it right now. You know, maybe let me go upstairs in my room and read this book I'm reading, and or let's go watch a movie. And he's like, cool. Yeah, you know, whatever. I mean, a lot of the times that we had jammed, we, you know, we'd drive all the way to the Bay Area and rehearse, come back, get back, eat some dinner, watch a movie. Yeah, let's, you know, maybe a little just jam tomorrow. And then I'll, you know, in the middle of the movie, there'll be a certain part and I'm just like, let's go downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, some stuff just, it just comes like, boom. That's what's cool about having a studio. You can either go upstairs and go take a nap, or, you know, go do something and then, and just pick and choose when you're going to go down there, when it feels good. Because you can't force it. You know, you can jam and try to force it and come up with some cool stuff. And I've done that in the past. And been like, yeah, that's good enough. But I think this one, everything was like a moment that was like, you know, like we jammed for like an hour and record ourselves. And then there's like, we'd listen to it, get some beers and what's that part? You know, we'd go like loop it and just like, that's sick, you know, like, and then we'd listen to it. We can go, okay, now we're going to go put something here and put something here. So, you know, it's just the right words at the right moment, you know.
Yeah.
It felt like a lot of it was like that.
It's very cool. I'm a research assistant, a PhD student, and I'm doing research in creativity, team creativity and innovation teams. And you describe this point, if you get stuck, if you don't see where you go now, you need to take a break. And in the down of the creativity phase, and do something else to, yeah, normal, all to daily routine things. And then it happens, you have the Eureka effect.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the show Daisy Jones and the Six? Okay, it's a... It came out a couple years ago, and it's I think it's kind of about, to me, the vibe is about, because it's like the late 60s, early 70s, but it reminds me of the story of Fleetwood Mac, how they were, you know, a band with a bunch of guys, and then they, you know, went through all their motions, and then they got Stevie Nicks and the other girl's name, but yeah, so they got them in the band and they just kind of revamped and what they're doing. But anyway, so going back to what I was, you know, Daisy Jones and the Six, they're having these writing sessions, and the guy's kind of uncomfortable because the producer brought this girl in and she's really, you know, carefree 60s, you know, do whatever she wants, you know, she'll have a glass of milk and then drink some whiskey, then smoke a joint. And the guy's just like, you know, like, what the hell, you know? And so they're jamming, and then she gets up and jumps in the pool, and he's like, I thought we were riding. She goes, we are. So that, to me, I was like, you know, I always get like, when I'm riding with the drummer, or, you know, in the past, I feel pressured, like, okay, I got to come up with something right now. Like, okay, he's here, I'm going to go upstairs. And like, well, I thought we were riding, you know, it's like, it's better just to do what you're doing and, you know, be in the same facility. But, you know, if it's not coming to you, if the universe ain't throwing nothing at you, then go do something, because it's going to happen. You know, it's kind of a long story what you said, but, you know, I'm just explaining that it's okay to just go do something.
Yeah, that's important. I also, I told it people and I say it to my students. because the brain is always on and there happen things, even if we don't know it, that there happen some things.
I mean, you know, you could hear, I mean, in the past I've heard, like, when I was younger, I'd be listening to, I don't know, Restless and Wild by Accept or something. And then my mom's in the other room and she's listening to classical music. And then I go in the bathroom in between the two rooms and somehow at that moment, they were both playing and they worked together. And I'm like, whoa, you know, and that's influential. You're just like, you know, that just happened.
Yeah.
And then I get my guitar. I'm like, oh, wait, what was that? You know,
how
so
was it?
This is when I was younger, you know.
But let us stick on when you was younger. How do you come in touch with music? How do you come in touch with your first guitar?
So Kiss was it for me. I mean, I was, I think I had a guitar and I didn't really learn how to play for, you know, I would learn a couple chords in here, but I think I practiced mostly. My dad had a really loud system. It was a Sansui. You know, the 70s, the big receiver and the turntable. And we lived in kind of in the country, so I could really crank my music loud. And my dad was single, so he was always out. And, you know, at that point, I was listening to Rocks and Draw the Line by Aerosmith, Unleashed in the East. The first Iron Maiden record just came out. Venom came out with In League with Satan. Angel Witch was out. So I had all these amazing records and I would just crank them up super loud and get my guitar that I had and just kind of jump around in front of the mirror and be like, so then I realized I should probably learn, you know, practice what I preach, you know.
yeah and
because I had a lot of fun with it, like it, I felt what they were doing but I couldn't do what they did, but it that was a turning point for me, like, okay, this is making me feel really good, and this is what I want to do.
Yeah, the fire came up.
Yeah. I remember when I was in sixth grade, I asked for a distortion box. Yeah, so yeah, I got that for Christmas, and I had it for, you know, like maybe a year and a half before I even got my first guitar. So I used to just stare at it and, you know, think to myself, one day, I'm going to plug a guitar into this. And, so I think it was in eighth grade, I finally got my first guitar. Was a copy of a Les Paul. It was called a Memphis Les Paul. And my dad was like, you know, you can get it, but you're going to play this acoustic first, you know. And the strings are like this far from the fret. But I learned how to play like Love is Like Oxygen and Smoke on the Water and, you know, maybe some blues stuff, you know. And once he seen that I, you know, would play it every day and not, you know, just say, I just want a guitar. I got that guitar saved up from mowing lawns and, you know, doing chores. He wasn't just going to get it. He's like, okay, you got to make sure you water, you know, do all the plants, make sure the dog's fed, make sure the dishes, well, you know, teaches you a little bit, you know. It made the guitar feel like it was more mine. It wasn't like I just got it because I asked for it. Yeah. But yeah, that's how it all started for me.
Yeah. And before we speak about how you today make music, you have in the basement your own studio. And but how was it in the beginning? There you haven't your own studio. And in this years before the technological things were another way, how was it for you back then?
So yeah, I mean, there was a store, and maybe it was worldwide, it was called Radio Shack, but I think there's some still out there, but it was like a store where, you know, just have phone cables and little attachments to, you know, the quarter inch, the eighth inch jack, all that kind of stuff. And they had the cassette players that were more for like dictating, you know, one speaker, you put the cassette in. I mean, I wanted a big boombox, but that just seemed out of my league, you know, like way too expensive, you know, and a beautiful big silver, you know, the boomboxes.
But I had this little, it was called a realistic dictator, whatever, not dictator, but, you know, something that you could talk to and make notes or whatever. So I would record, you know, what ideas I had, and then I would play along to that, you know, to get the harmonies or do another guitar part. And then I think later I bought another one, because then I would record myself onto that one with the two guitars playing. And then I thought, you know what? I should probably jam with another guitar player, and then we can both play at the same time. But yeah, and that was a lot of fun. I mean, I remember when Legacy, when we first started jamming, when we'd write songs, we had the big boom box. And, you know, we'd go buy a cheap microphone and duct tape it to the ceiling and put it in the middle. And we'd had cassettes of our jam sessions. And yeah, that was kind of how we did it. I wouldn't want to play it for anybody, but at least you get to hear the idea of what it would sound like, you know.
If you, between then and now, there are so many years, from tape trading to Napster to AI generated content. There are so many things happened in this time. And what do you welcome from this new technology stuff? And what do you think you could have done without it?
Well, I mean, it saves a lot of time. Technology's, you know, made it easier for musicians to record. I mean, when we recorded our first records, you know, you have to rewind the tape. You know, if you want to edit something, they had to cut the tape, you know, find a spot, cut it out, tape it together. And that was something special that a producer could do. You know, I mean, there was some that are really good at it. And, you know, now I remember the first time we used Pro Tools, which is, you know, all digital kind of stuff. Pro Tools were an editing program that was in the back, you know, in the closet at a studio. And there was this one guy in there, and they're like, oh yeah, we got this guy. They got the digital editing machine. And this was on the record low. And I would go in there and I would see all the frequencies, and, you know, he's like cutting my guitars, getting all like, you know, dun, 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 and get rid of the, so it's like, dun, 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 dun. And then, you know, a couple years later, the boards that they use, those are gone. Now the Pro Tools is the main thing recording. So that's what I use. I don't use Pro Tools, but I use Logic, and that's kind of the same thing. And it's just really quick and easy to record yourself. You know, it's all, especially if you have a grid being, you know, the BPMs of what you're doing, you know, 120, 180, whatever. But it's easy to cut to stuff like that, you know. And you find your way with the drums, you know, especially the drums, so it doesn't sound robotic. You can lean back and, you know, push a little bit, I think, a little bit, but stuff like that.
Yeah, it's quite cool if you say it with the cutting the band. If I'm making since 25 years, I'm working on a broadcasting station. And when I start there, we also have something by cutting the tape and strange times.
The audio.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you used to cut the tape?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
And now we can.
And
now we can say a software or a tool or something like this make music that sounds like this, and we have nothing to do with it. It's strange.
Yeah. I mean, I miss those days, but you couldn't do it yourself. You'd have to have the producer, engineer that's recording you do that, because that's, you got to know where the, you know, where it's, you can't see it. You can't go, oh, there's the wavelength, and right there, that's where you'd cut it, you know. And then if you, you know, like on Pro Tools and Logic, once you cut it, you take the piece out, you can make sure you did it right. And if you cut too much, if you cut too much, you can always pull it over a little bit and get a little piece of the sound back. But when you cut a tape, if you didn't do it right, because it's happened to us before, you know, you're just like,
yeah,
that's not the sound. But, you know, that's kind of funny. I made that sound. But anyway, Yeah, you know, you'd have to go back and find that little piece of tape and tape it back together. That means it's time to get a new producer, if, you know, back in the day, but yeah.
Yeah. And but at the same time, there are so many changes in the how to make music, but I think you've always made use of this technical precision. How do you manage the balance between high-end production and organic energy?
Well, that's just it. So you don't have to focus too much on the, you know, the tools that you're using. Once you learn how to use them, it's it takes away, or it gives you back the time of being creative. Because, like, my biggest problem recording is the battle that I have is, you build yourself up to record, and then the red light comes on, and I always, like, ugh. You know, it's just like when I'm writing, too, like the first 5 minutes, I'm thinking that I'm recording, and you just have to forget that you're recording, and then all of a sudden you get lost in what you're doing. Kind of the same way when you're recording, but the problem that I have is right when I'm ready, the guitar's out of tune. You know, and I use Les Pauls, and they're very finicky guitars. They're either, they stay in tune and they're amazing, or they're relentless. They won't stay in tune. So you think you got it in tune, and you start playing, and then you hear that it's out of tune with what you just recorded. And I've wasted, you know, in an 8-hour session, I've spent at least 2 or 3 hours trying to tune my guitar. So that's annoying. Well, I was going to say the tools that you're using, like recording it, you know, like Logic or Pro Tools, once you learn how to use it, that gives you back your creativity. So you don't have to think too much, unless something goes, you know, obviously stuff goes wrong. You don't know what you're doing. You hit the wrong button and the screen just, you know, went haywire. Oh, no. But other than that, just recording, everything's great. You know, it's just you point and click, you know, fix stuff, especially the drums. That's what's cool about recording at home. When we're using MIDI drums, you get a drum set that looks like a real drum set, but it's all MIDI, and you could pick, you know, your sounds. We use Tune Tracks, and after we do it, he can even go there and go, okay, let's make that part a little bit longer, or, you know, you kind of messed up. You just go in there and just look at the grid where the, you know, and you can quantize it to where it's, instead of, it's like, even though he could do it, it just saves time, you know, and spending, you know, like, here, one more time. You know, you just go in there and fix it. And then, you know, especially when you're writing, you know, you're not, it's just to get the idea.
I have a thought in my head about it. In the past, it was, you spend time on doing it in the right timing, the music, and now the tool can optimize it for you. But how it is? Do you need afterwards more time to learn it for performing live, or how is it?
So, it just makes it easier recording wise to have a grid, you know, to have your timing, so that way if you have to punch in anything, especially the drums, if you get like a great take but at the end he messed up, you know, instead of them guessing where they're going to punch you in, you can have different sessions of those parts, like, okay, we're going to do another take, and you could go, if you have to, you could go, like, you know what, that roll sounds better, so you just go and, you know, write where it's at, cut it, and it's going to be in time. So that's, you know, for that. But live, we don't use that. We have used it on one song because there is like an intro that we have to play along to. And it's, you know, and only the drummer can hear it. So that way I'm not even tripping. I'm just playing to the drums like I normally do. But there is bands that definitely do that live. To me, I like to play live without a click because I think it's more of, you get more of a vibe, and we usually tend to go a little bit faster live. I know that we've, you know, when we have tried to play to a click playing live, I feel like it's too slow. because there's something about the crowd and the energy which makes it feel like, you know, it's too slow, but it's really not. It's the tempo of the record. But when you're with the crowd, there's more energy and you're just like, ugh. And, you know, I think you progress on songs that you have on a record. They really come to life after you've played them for a year. I mean, remember when you write a record, you just wrote the riff, you're moving on to the next song, then you rehearse it a couple. You've only played the song maybe, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times in your life. You know, and then once you go on tour, you play the songs, you know, thousands of times, you know. So they eventually get faster.
Yeah, but that's the difference between a record and the live moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why in when I was younger, I preferred live records. I mean, they're different now, but the ones that influenced me, you know, were definitely of the late 70s, early 80s. You know, those records were just amazing, you know. But plus, they had better sound live, I think. You know, especially like the Scorpions and Judas Priest, they were, when they would play Diamonds and Rust or Genocide or, you know, any of this old Scorpion songs, He's a Woman, She's a Man, you listen to the records and they're very sterile. Even Kiss, you know, it sounds like they're trying to be too perfect. And then live, it's kind of sloppy and more dirty and a little bit more punk. And that's what we try to go for. I've learned that, and I've done that. I've done that with recordings too. I'm like, hey, just go through it and play it all the way through and stop, you know, because there's times where I'll go, nope, that's not good. I'm trying to get it perfect. I'm like, just fucking keep playing it, you know, and just go fix the beginning later, you know, because you get that vibe. And then once you get into your, then you're not thinking about it anymore. Like I was saying earlier, after a couple minutes go by, you're not thinking about recording. But if you think about recording each part and getting it perfect, perfect, you know, then it's going to be perfect, but it's going to sound.
Yeah.
You want it to sound like, you know, have a good groove to it.
I understand it. And I hope our listeners also understand it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You should try it.
Your sound has continually opened up from classic thrash to death and groove elements to black metal influences and orchestral moments. I think you have redefined the musicality of thrash. How do you personally handle this tension, respecting boundaries, but perhaps also deliberately crossing them?
Yeah, I mean, we stick to what we know and we go for what we know, but you know, you're like, well, you know, I'm really into this kind of music too. And, you know, let's try it. I mean, that's the whole thing that we do is we always say, let's just try it. Because there's a lot of times where I'm like, just like with vocals, you know, I'll ask Chuck to try something. And maybe in the past, he's like, nope, I don't want to do that. But now we try it. We say, well, let's try it, you know. Or he'll say the same thing to me, like, hey, let's try to, and I'm like, no way. But we've learned to, like, let's try it.
Yeah.
You know? And then we listen back and go, that's really cool. Or, nope, that doesn't work, you know?
Yeah, I think
So we just try stuff. And I was really surprised on Meant to Be when, because with I have another band called Dragon Lord. It's more of a side project, and it's a lot of it's, you know, strings and choir with, you know, blast beats and just crazy symphonic thrash, black metal, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, Chuck was like, hey, we should put strings on Meant to Be. And I was just like, wow, Testament with strings. That's all right, you know. So we got a real quintet and talked to him and explained to him. He heard it and he's like, yeah, this could be really cool. And, you know, right when he sent his idea for the verse, we were just like, wow, that sounds really good. And just keeping an open mind about it, you know, not, it didn't get in the way. I mean, it could have got to where it's just sound like, no, that doesn't work. But it reminded me going back to my childhood when I heard my mom's classical music over here and listening to my heavy metal music. And then it there was a moment where it just merged and it worked, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, since then, obviously that's a genre of, you know, mixing stuff like that. Nightwish, Dimmu Borgir, Emperor, I mean, you name it. Everybody's, you know, Metallica, everybody's kind of messed around with that and it works. It, you know, those old, the old world and the new world can work together.
Yeah. I sometimes think there are no boundaries because creativity is not something that happens in a bubble. You have influences that nurture, matter your creativity. And so it's very natural that also in music that the genres are not that strict.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you can't set a boundary. I mean, you can't be a thrash band and go, okay, now we're a rap band, or, you know, hey, now we're gonna play country. I mean, you have to stick to your guns if it works. You know, if you want to become something totally different, then call it something else and do another band. But if you have something like, for instance, my band Testament, what we do works and people expect to have that sound. There is some perimeters of what you can do and what you can't do, but yeah, you just have to find it, you know, and you have to, I mean, there is parameters, but you can't go totally nuts, but there's enough room to where you can go, okay, we're growing a little bit, you know, we're trying something and it's working.
Yeah. And that's about, that's a very important thing. Try it. If you don't try it, you will never know if it works or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you want to win the lotto, you go buy a ticket, you know, maybe you'll win. You can't not win the lotto if you don't buy a ticket. So
yeah, that's true. Okay. Many say that you are the serious philosophers among thrash metal bands because your lyrics are often metaphysical, societal, or spiritual. Do you recognize yourself in this description?
I mean, we definitely, all of us really are really into, you know, history and, you know, predictions, you know, especially our older stuff that we were really into, like Nostradamus and Edgar Allan Poe and, you know, just cool stuff like that, nice books and just science fiction. And then I think that's the perfect, you know, like Iron Maiden, that was a big influence, how they would use old stories and make them into songs, you know, the Phantom of the Opera, the Quest for Fire, you know, just Number of the Beast, talking about revelations and stuff like that. I mean, that's heavy metal. You know, it's kind of a history lesson. And, you know, we're into that too. So, yeah, it really worked for us. I mean, you can talk about, you know, we've adapted to go outside of science fiction and talk about more real things that have happened to us now that we're older and have some experience. I think that's a big thing too, is having experience, you know, so it can be heartfelted, you know, rather than just copying something and going, I think this is what that would feel like. I mean, you might get lucky and, you know, maybe if you had a bad childhood and that's something heartfelted and you talk about it, but, I think we're in a good position where we can blend both those together, you know, keep a little bit of fantasy, but then also things that have happened to us and other people, and they can relate to it. And that's a great feeling, listening to heavy music. And, you know, we already got that part, but having words that can hit with someone else and going, you know, I get it. You know, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. And I think also that, The meaning of music is for the audience sometimes another than for the musician, because in the fight of the tones, there comes something up, and if you meet that point where people can cover up with emotions or with personal things, So that's where the connection starts, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why, I mean, for me, I'm going to bring up Meant to Be again, though, but when we presented the musically, I was already, okay, we got something really good here. But when I heard Chuck's vocals and then what he was saying, I was just like, man, I can totally relate to this. And it just, you know, the melancholy of, you know, something's wrong and, you know, how do we're meant to be. And I mean, yeah, you know, you'd have to read the lyrics and stuff, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. 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 For me, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also by Infection AI, I feel this. I feel this so deep. And there we come to sometimes genre are all also ascribed functions, maybe punk, for example. Thrash is often said that to have been founded as a form of protest music. How is it for you today? Thrash as a protest or rather a form of musical reflection on what is going on in this world?
It's entertainment, first of all, but it's also, you know, it's all in, I guess, where we're at in our lives. It's information for people and stuff that we believe in, but we're not trying to push any policies or political ideologies on people or anything, but it's just being aware and seeing what's going on or what's happened, you know. We're destined to repeat, doomed to forget. So it's, you know, it's good to be reminded of stuff, I guess, you know.
Yes. Many musicians, another questions I've found in my many questions, many musicians struggle with the tension between the artistic aspiration and market logic. Especially in the 90s, when you think about it, when thrash disappeared from mainstream, many bands made compromises. How was it for you? I believe you as a band decided against to make a compromise.
Yeah, and you know, we also transformed into another type of band. We got heavier and Alex left the band and then we lost Louie. And then Greg left. It was just me and Chuck, and we kind of reformed. We were actually going to call the band something else, but we ended up keeping it together. And we did this tour. It was on the Demonic Tour. It was in 97, 96. And we toured, I think, it was like July or June all the way to Christmas. We didn't even go home. We just stayed on the road. Usually, you know, you go home and, okay, in 3 weeks we're going here. And we just, and it really took a beating on the band. But we were, you know, we kind of went under a little bit because of the whole metal thing going under a little bit. And like you were saying, the change and the different genre that came up, which was grunge kind of music and stuff. So we just went the opposite way. I mean, we were the real alternative. You know, a lot of people in metal were like, you know, instead of saying, oh, Testament sold out, it's like the new word was Testament sold in. So we gained a lot of respect, I think, even though we were playing, you know, 200, 300, 400 seaters instead of playing, you know, the bigger places that we normally played, they were sold out. And these people that were there were just like, you know, really believing in what we were doing. And we came out with The Gathering and that lineup changed again. And I was telling the people that were in the band, like, you know, we did so much work, like, you know, you should really stick around. This new music's going to be really good. But, you know, everything has a reason and things happen the way they happen. And, you know, we ended up getting Dave Lombardo in the band. We got Steve DiGiorgio. And we brought back James Murphy as a guest to do, you know, a couple solos. And that record just really put us right back on top again, but in a different chapter. You know, it wasn't like cute hair glam guys, you know, kind of, it was, we were just like where we started from. It was like a full circle of the legacy. You know, we were heavy again. So we've been on that track, I think, ever since. I mean, we've let some of the other elements come in, but we're basically, you know, really, in my mind, you know, for Testament, the heavy Testament.
And I think with the gathering, also this, some people said you are a bridging band. You are you are a mentor band, and you are also headliners, and you're bridging generations with this. And I think this happened with gathering, or maybe also with the New Testament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, our crowds now are so diverse. You know, we see a lot of young people out there, and then you see like some really old people, which is fine. I mean, we're growing up and we're still metalheads, and that's awesome. But it's cool to see people coming out. But overall, yeah, I mean, it's a very diverse crowd. And it's cool. It's cool to see people growing up with metal and bringing their kids. And I mean, our drummer was like that. His dad was a Testament fan and probably played Testament driving Chris to school. You know, Chris is in high school listening to, you know, Dark Roots of Earth. And he said that was one of the first metal CD, or that was the first CD he bought on his own. I mean, obviously he probably got into the way heavier stuff, but you know, now he's in Testament, and that's crazy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of ageless, you know, I think, metal.
If you think about your younger one, have you ever thought that this would happen, that a Testament would be ageless?
No. No. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think one thing about metal bands, or maybe any band, I don't know. When you get in a band or a gang, like, you know, like thrash metal, heavy metal, whatever age you start, you know, you grow up in life and you do other things. But I think the band always kind of stays that age in a way, because you still get together and you still give each other a lot of grief and mess with each other. And the music's, you know, always kind of trying to stay the same but grow. So in a way, we're all still in our 20s.
Yeah, that
musically yeah, wise.
But
that's
the best thing that could happen.
Yeah, it really is. You know, if I could see into the future when I was younger, and you know, see ourselves and listen to our new music, I would just be blown away. Like, whoa.
And when you think about the next generation, what do you want to pass on to young bands?
Well, especially some of the newer bands, they're doing a great job. You know, they're, you know, taking it to another heavy level. And I really like what's going on with, you know, the deathcore and metalcore stuff is really cool. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, they're really doing a good job. I think they're being melodic, but it's being crazy. Maybe a little bit more catchy stuff. I know there's a lot of the music that I like that I've met some newer bands that I've mentioned, but I can't. If you said how does that song go? I mean, I couldn't go. It goes, you know, na 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 na. I can't do the melody. I don't know. It goes.
Yeah.
But in the moment when you're listening to it, it's amazing. So it's really good. But that's the one thing, you know, I wish that would be cool. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. Be, you know, from my influences of the newer stuff, but still trying to keep the Testament, you know, melodic stuff where you could go, it's that one that goes dun, 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 you know, a little bit of melody.
Yeah. Our conversation will appear at the second advent. What does mean the Christmas season to you?
I'm older now, but I think when I was younger and growing up, it was always, you know, family time to slow down and, I don't know, give thanks to what you got and, you know, kind of meet up with people and your family and kind of just all, you know, be happy together for a little bit and then start a new, you know, the new year.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's a good feeling. I feel like it's one of, you know, it's a great time for everybody that believe in that, you know.
Yeah. I think rock music and metal also somehow thrive on traditions. And so when I think of Christmas, I think on traditions and then I think on guitar music. Funny thing.
Yeah, works good together for sure.
But in this, are there any traditions to that time, even if you believe it or not? Are there traditions that you hold on to?
Yeah, I'm putting up a tree, you know, lighting it up and decorating the house up and making good food and maybe not thinking about music so much, taking a little break from it. And then when all that's done, it's like, you know, you're kind of rejuvenated and, you know, you're like, okay, it's a new year. Let's make it happen again.
Let's start the magic again.
I think something like that.
Okay. And on the other way, are there traditions in doing music in thrash metal where you hold on to?
Well, like I said, you know, I mean, there is a little bit of parameters where when we're writing, you know, who we are, Testament, and what we've done and what our fans like. And, you know, you hear some people complain about certain stuff, but I think we've been pretty consistent on what we do. So, yeah, something like that. I think that's a good answer, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer.
It's kind of relevant to what we were talking about earlier, you know, just being in the moment and still loving what you do, I think, you know?
Absolutely. And back to Christmas. One very important question. Which Christmas metal song must not be missing under your Christmas tree?
Christmas song. Wow. I don't know. You know, there's so much stuff on the radio. You know, I'm trying to think of any kind of metal Christmas song. I really like King Diamond's version of There's No Christmas. You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's a little bit against it, but, you know, it works. I'm sure there's a lot of other ones I can't think of anything, but I really like listening to bands like Nightwish and stuff like that during this time. You know, it's festive.
Yeah.
And it works really well, I think.
Yeah, that's also sad.
Old Nightwish.
Old Nightwish. Yeah, that's a good...
The older stuff, yeah.
That's a really good point because in the change of the seasons, we are listening to another type of music. It's changed over the year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you're not listening to surfer music. You're listening to more... I know black metal really works well in the winter too. So, you know, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Put on, you know, Mayhem's Demon record or something. I don't know.
We are actually almost at the end. I have two standard questions that I pretty much ask all my guests, but they also fit very well into this Christmas context. What are you grateful for here and now?
I'm grateful to be in my band and that we have a great record out and we're all getting along really good. And the fans and everybody that we just put the record out and everybody likes it. And that's a good feeling, you know. It's a lot of hard work and to see that everybody gets it. Because, I mean, it could be the other round where we like it, but everybody's like, I like your other record better or something like that. But I feel like this one really hits really good with everybody, and we're happy with it as well. I'm thankful for that, for sure.
Okay, and my last question for today, if you had one wish free, what would you wish for?
What would I wish for? I mean, seriously, world peace, you know, just everybody get along.
Yeah.
You know, just everybody chill out.
Okay.
Don't get so you know, offended by everything. I don't know. There's so much garbage going on. It's just world peace.
Yeah. Let's concentrate on world peace. Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, dear listeners, this concludes our podcast with Eric from Testament. Testament, it's for me one of the most impressive bands in terms of virtuosity. And in my opinion, it tells an exciting story from four decades of music, four decades of persistence and movement at the same time. And that band has never left their identity to change. And that still shows today the maturity is not stagnation. Thank you, Eric, for this conversation.
You're welcome. Yeah, it was nice talking to you. Thank you.
And thank you, all listeners. My name is Diana Heinbuhr, and this was Metal Minds The Pit Unplugged. Stay curious, stay through, and have a peaceful Christmas season.
Happy holidays.